Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Howdy, listeners from coast to coast, the Gulf to Canada, and around the globe. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And here we go into the third week of March. Things bubbling everywhere, 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 like a cauldron of unknown witches. Well, I promised you kind of an update on election and voter fraud, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. But you know, in my mind, voter fraud and election fraud, particularly if concerted, if organized, if widespread, is treason. It is not just a breach of election laws. It is the theft of the building block of a representative republic. And it is a blatant attack on the Constitution and on the basic building blocks of American values and what the founders envisioned for this country. So I'm going to give you a little history of treason prior to getting into a very short, more of a reminder, if you will, of the election fraud of years gone by, particularly the last 10 years, and then tell you about all the new twists and wrinkles which have been brought to the election fraud game by our friends, the Democrats, also known as communists, most elsewhere in the world. And then, of course, we're going to have rat-a-tat-tat, and boy, actually, there's some great rat-a-tat-tats you're going to be very pleased with. There's some you're going to shake your head at, and there's others, why don't we just say you'll grit your teeth. So let's get started. Let's start off with a quote by the founders, one of the founders, Jefferson, and it ties right into this show. And in fact, it ties right into the current events. And this history of treason, well, wait till I get to the rest of the story, which is upcoming. But Jefferson's quote, "Let's call the assault on the Constitution treason and dispatch the traitors, either death or kick them out of the country and seize all their assets and give them to the people," unquote. Go, Thomas, go. But Thomas was not an angel, as you'll see in the story I'm about to bring you. Now, let me tell you about the ranch story this week. I think you'll get a chuckle out of this. In fact, I'm kind of chuckling even as I begin it, never mind getting to the punchline. So I told you a little bit over the last few months about this ongoing install of a solar system. Once again, not a huge system, just enough to augment things in case, you know, something happens to the grid, whatever could that be, or somebody flicks a switch to power to the ranch. Oh, they would never do that. In any event, we've been working on this actually, well, probably for 9 months, including research and getting all the bits and parts and pieces in, and I've brought you various updates. Well, this last weekend, a master electrician who's helping us with the project and his son were out, and we had hoped over the course of a Saturday and Sunday to complete it and literally hit the on switch and zoom, be powered by the sun at least partially. Well, there's a great moral to this story. So we busted our butts all day Saturday. I mean, completely. And by the way, when I say we, I was the gopher, okay? I was the lackey, because what I know about electricity would fill less than half a small thimble. I've never really been intrigued by electricity. In fact, I've kind of always abhorred anything to do with electrical wiring. So to say that I'm versed in electricity would be like saying an elephant could read Latin. How's that? Or maybe a dinosaur could read Mandarin. But in any event, I was the gopher. I went and got the machines and did the digging and did this and got them piped when they needed pipe and, you know, rummaged through the boxes looking for parts they were looking for. That was my job. And also to make a few decisions along the way about where to mount, how to mount certain parts of the installation. In any event, we busted our butt all day Saturday and completely rewired the main panel. I mean, he did a beautiful job. A bird's nest of wires, as you can imagine, on a 1868 house that's had 8 additions over the last 160 years, and who knows how many electrical hands working on it, some skilled, some apparently not so skilled, what that panel box looked like. But when he got done, it looked as good as any panel box in any upscale new home anywhere on the planet. It was really quite impressive. And he got the box mounted, which is right next to the panel box outside, for the solar installation. And he integrated the gas-powered backup that we have, with the solar-powered backup that we were installing, with the grid system that he had completely rewired and cleaned up. And it was a pretty impressive show, let me tell you. I was duly impressed. Of course, when it comes to electricity, it does not take much to impress me. In fact, I'm impressed every time I turn on the light switch. But on Sunday, we were out there, the wind was howling. I mean, there was dust and dirt everywhere in your eyes, in your nose. And I was digging with our little mini backhoe up one of the buried lines we had put in because we had to connect it to the panels, get the juice into the house through all the new wiring that he had just done, and then we needed to mount the inverter inside the house, which we did, and then unpack all the battery elements, which we did, stack them on the racks that we had, which we did, wire all the batteries together, which we did, and then he had to wire the innards of the inverter, which well, why don't we just say it's all Greek to me? There are a lot of wires going a lot of different places, and he kind of worked almost without pause. Every once in a while, he'd reference the handbook that had been sent along with the inverter. Otherwise, he was just rocking and rolling. And it gets to be about 5 o'clock, and we're getting kind of excited because we're about done, right? All the batteries are connected to one another. The inverter is all wired. The panels we went out and tested them, we're throwing out, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volts, which is great, and plenty of amperage, and don't even ask me how all that stuff works because I can't tell you. But the bottom line is we're ready to go. I mean, we're like down to the wire, no pun intended. And here, guess what we were missing? We were missing 2 wires, literally a foot, maybe 14 inches long, that would connect the batteries to the inverter. And the little ringlets that go at the end of these crimp wires that slip over the studs, as I learned they were called, the electrical studs, both the positive and the negative at the batteries, which are wired together, and at the inverter. Well, you know, the sum total of the value of those parts is maybe $40. And I may be kind. It's probably less. So 4 little pieces of metal, the ringlets, which the wire gets crimped over, and then get attached to the studs with a kind of a screw, if you will. And by the way, if you're an electrician out there or you know electrical and you're cringing as I tell you this story, you should be. How's that? Anyway, a $40 collection of a few little parts separated us from victory and defeat, from on versus off, from grid versus solar, from the new day to the old medieval times. And guess what? It remained that way. And it has remained that way right up to the recording of this show. In fact, the 4 parts, which probably don't weigh a pound and cost less than $40, are on their way, and we plan to finish this up in the next week or two as he has time. So the moral of this story is, no matter how momentous or gigantic or big or important or, shall we say, smart a project is, pay attention to the details. Because in the end, you will get the skyscraper erected. And if you forgot that one little girder in a corner of the building, you're going to have a big problem. So I will bring you an update when this thing gets turned on. How's that? Now, let's talk about our treason history, shall we? Because remember, my predicate, you may agree, you may not agree. You may think that one person filling out a false mail-in ballot or voting twice or voting in 2 different states or voting in 2 different elections or 2 different precincts is not treason. I personally think it is. You may think that's a violation of the law, but I don't think there's any of you listening to me that would disagree that a concerted conspiratorial, particularly as I tell you this history of treason, what the Constitution says, that a group acting in concert across a battery of precinct states and territories to manipulate, discard, manufacture votes is treason. I think you'll agree. So treason is the only crime defined in the United States Constitution, which states, quote, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort, unquote. Like, you know, when you get paid by China and let 50,000 Chinese nationals of military male age into the country, when you send China foreign aid, yes, folks, we're sending China foreign aid, and you allow them to infiltrate the White House, your departments, and buy your land, and I can go on and on and on. Or even let a spy balloon drift across the entire country and all your military installations. However, I digress. And the founders, by the way, got this language from the law of Edward III of England, one of the kings. It was enacted in 1350 AD. I mean, this is a long time ago. And his statute, if you want to call it that, criminalized, quote, compassing or imagining, unquote, the death of the king, sexually violating certain women in the royal household, counterfeiting the great seal or coinage of the realm, and murdering royal officials. And these offenses are obviously, in today's day and world, in some cases criminal, in some cases, like thought crime, not prosecutable at all, although the communists would like to make it a crime to do. I told you about the law in Canada, which Trudeau and company are trying to get enacted last week on therightsideradio.com. That's just in chills up your spine. The U.S. Constitution also requires, quote, the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act, or, quote, confession in open court, unquote, in order to convict somebody of treason. How many witnesses do we have to Joe Biden taking money from foreign governments? And how many instances do we have of favors that he's done them as vice president and as president? Well, I digress again. And listen, this wording was put into the Constitution on purpose. And it's really interesting, of course, because Jefferson was kind of instrumental in the Constitution, although he and Adams were the only two folks that didn't sign it in the end. But it was intended to preclude judges or politicians from using treason trials to go after political opponents. Does this ring a bell recently, folks? That was common, by the way, in early, quote-unquote, modern England. In fact, for centuries, British kings coerced judges into condemning political opponents to death. To death, folks. Based on kind of made-up evidence or flimsy allegations without proof. And many of those claims were based on the claim that the traitor had compassed or imagined the death of the king, unquote. Thought crime. You could be put to death for thought crime, particularly, by the way, if you were a political rival. The idea of treason in the United States, however, evolved. And it evolved from the initial writing of the Constitution through several kind of concrete instances or circumstances that arose. Within 10 years of the Constitution's ratification, I brought you this story, there were groups of protesters in Pennsylvania. They were convicted of treason for violence, like armed resistance to enforcement of federal tax laws. And as I told you in those historical stories, get them in the archives on therightsideradio.com, both President Washington and Adams pardoned all these men before they could be hung. And by the way, their convictions rested on an old English concept, once again, that levying war, quote-unquote, included any violent resistance to a law. The courts, however, moved far away from that as time went on. Interestingly enough, the first real case that tested this evolution of how the American jurisprudence viewed treason was the trial of Aaron Burr. Let me give you a little background. It's pretty fascinating. Burr had been Thomas Jefferson's vice president from 1801 to 1805. Probably you didn't know that. Burr, as I've told you in previous historical stories, was not a nice guy. He was a political chameleon. I mean, you know, whichever way the wind blew that was politically expedient, he was like a reed of grass bending with the wind. Burr would change his party or his office whenever he believed it was politically or financially advantageous. When Jefferson selected Burr as his running mate in 1800, hoping that Burr's presence on the ticket would carry the northern states like New York, he was violently disappointed. I mean, like, right away. In fact, as a little sidelight, prior to the ratification of the 12th Amendment in 1804, the Electoral College, which is provided for in the Constitution, did not specify whether electors were voting for president or vice president when they cast their ballots. And believe it or not, Jefferson and Burr had agreed to be Jefferson's vice president, remember, tied in the Electoral College. I mean, you can't make these stories up. History is unbelievable. And Burr, being, shall we say, opportunistic, to be kind, allowed the election, rather than going with the deal he had made with Jefferson to be the vice president, to be thrown into the House of Representatives, as required by the Constitution. And it took 37 ballots, 37, to decide that Jefferson was actually the president-elect. Obviously, should we say, Jefferson harbored an extreme distaste for his vice president from then on. In July of 1804, Burr had that duel with Alexander Hamilton and killed him. I'm sure you know about it. Later that year, Jefferson ran for re-election with a different running mate. Oh, what a surprise. And by March 1805, Burr was toast. He was out of the government. He was out of office. He was a political exile, an accused murderer because of the duel, and he fled toward the western frontier. And Burr made a number of visits to the frontier. I've brought you this story, so I'm going to be really brief. He was trying to provoke war with Spain and the United States and liberate Mexico, which he wanted to be the emperor or king of. And he also wanted to separate the Trans-Allegheny region from the United States and set up his own country. Unfortunately for Burr, one of his co-conspirators began to have second thoughts. He could feel the rope around his neck, shall we say. And he sent copies of Burr's letters and communications and plans to Washington, D.C. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal, and obviously I've done a pile of research on this little series of personal financial preparedness I'm bringing you. And in doing so, I looked at a bunch of precious metal dealers. There's a bunch of them out there. Some are very good, but I think one of the very best, BBB, A-plus rated, five-star rated, is Harvard Gold Group. They have a terrific private direct delivery program, your house, your business, your investment accounts. They can help you set up your investment accounts to hold these metals. I negotiated, by the way, a $250 discount on your first order through them, which I think is kind of cool. And they have a lowest price guarantee, whether it's gold or silver, and they will be happy to talk to you about that and how it works. So call them, 844-977-GOLD, or go to their website, harvardgoldgroup.com, and use the code REID, Reed, that's me, to get your $250 discount and some other goodies.
Threads West, An American Saga, is the number one national Amazon and Barnes & Noble best-selling epic saga, recipient of 37 national literary awards. Written by rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal and serves in part as the inspiration of the acclaimed 1883 miniseries. The sweeping Threads West epic saga is our American story. Beginning in May 1854, men and women from America and Europe, England, Ireland, Norway, Denmark, Italy, and Prussia, an Oglala Sioux family, a Ute Indian family, a Spanish vaquero chased north by the Texas Rangers, an elderly black couple setting their life sails for the winds of freedom, a renegade you will revile, and an American trapper you'll love. Men and women of uncommon cultures, differing origins, competing ambitions, and their weave of the American cloth in the West. Alexandra Brown, Romantic Shorts, says, Reed Lance Rosenthal has outdone himself. Rosenthal's characters just blew me away. They are as real, if not more so, as most of the people I have ever met. Get it now. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Nook, Audible, or from the publishers, ThreadsWestSeries.com.
So Jefferson learned about this on November 25th, 1806, and he made a huge clamor in the papers that a traitorous conspiracy had been uncovered. And he called, quote, on all persons whatsoever engaged or concerned in the same to cease all further proceedings therein, as they will answer the contrary at their peril, unquote. Anyway, the House of Representatives, no friend of Jefferson's, required him to present evidence in support of his claims. And at that point, Jefferson revealed that it was Burr. This is January 22, 1807. And he called him an arch co-conspirator and a traitor whose guilt is placed beyond all question, unquote. You know, Jefferson, by the way, who was not a Federalist. He believed in less national government. It's a really odd position for that type of guy to take. So, you know, everybody has their prejudice. They have their personal stuff, folks. Anyway, several of Burr's associates were arrested. They were hauled to Washington, D.C. for trial. And President Jefferson and Secretary of State James Madison personally interrogated one of them and told him, quite contrary to law, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, that anything he said would not be used to him in court, although it later was, obviously. Kind of reminds you of a general who was set up by Comey, you know? It's amazing how history repeats. The case was tried before U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice Marshall. As a little sidelight, you know, it's all about personalities, folks, right? Marshall loathed Jefferson, couldn't stand him. Although they were both from Virginia and cousins to boot, they had polar opposite views. Okay, Jefferson believed in less national government. Marshall believed and used his position as Chief Justice to set up a more powerful national government. And to make matters worse, geez, tell me if this doesn't sound familiar, right? Merrick Garland. Marshall was appointed by lame duck President John Adams, whom Jefferson did not get along with either until the very end, and confirmed by a lame duck Federalist, that is, big national government, Senate in early 1801, just a week or two before Jefferson took office. So, in Jefferson's mind, Marshall occupied a stolen seat on the Supreme Court that Jefferson thought he should have had a chance to fill. So kind of put yourselves in the position of all these different folks and all the personal animosities and resentments that are going on. In February of 1807, Marshall blew out Jefferson's case. He ruled that Burr's associates could not be tried at the nation's capital since they had not committed any crime there, and they were released. Meanwhile, Burr is traveling down the Mississippi River because he hears that there's a plan to assassinate him in New Orleans. The U.S. military caught up with him and arrested him on February 19, 1807. He was sent to Richmond for trial because his, quote, overt act, as Jefferson called it, of treason, had taken place on an island, and if I mispronounce it, my apologies, Blennerhasset Island, which is a small sliver that at that time was part of Virginia in the Ohio River. However, at this military standoff on this island between Burr's supporters and the U.S. military, Burr was not present. He was not on the island. Big thing. Keep that in your mind. And Jefferson took, like, a personal interest in the prosecution of Burr's case. He tried to, unfortunately, rigged the jury with Republicans that were all kind of under his Jeffersonian wing. He wanted the Treasury Department to pay the expenses of government witnesses. He sent his prosecutor blank pardons, which the prosecutor had licensed to fill in, quote, at your discretion, unquote, if the prosecutor could get any of the witnesses to testify against Burr. And remember, this is a guy who is not a quote-unquote nationalists, as they were known at that time, not in favor of a big national government, and in favor of limited government. He wrote the Declaration of Independence. But he was so pissed off over all the stuff that had been going on, and so convinced that Burr committed treason and Marshall was conspiring with him, the Chief Justice, that he actually declared martial law in New Orleans. That's right, where Burr was being held, which enabled military authorities to arrest civilians without warrant, by the way, including journalists, to go through people's private mail, etc. I mean, it's really mind-boggling. And they tried to use as evidence, his prosecutors, letters and things that were published in local newspapers, which, by the way, shows you just how personally Jefferson took all this stuff because he hated newspapers. In fact, in April of 1807, he wrote, quote, "Nothing can now be believed which is in a newspaper," unquote. In any event, despite all these shenanigans, there was a trial. It began on August 3rd, 1807. The prosecution lined up 140 witnesses. Burr's lawyers objected that the witnesses were not offering any evidence regarding any actual overt act of treason as required by the Constitution. And guess who was presiding over the trial? Oh, that's right, Chief Justice Marshall. And he was presiding as a circuit judge. And he ruled in favor of Burr, the defense, arguing that only witnesses who could testify about an overt act of levying war could take the stand. And since Burr had not been present on that military encounter on Blennerhasset Island in December of 1806, no further testimony would be admitted, and the jury found him not guilty by the evidence presented. Jefferson kind of went off the deep end and started advocating for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would enable the president to remove federal judges from office if both houses of Congress requested. And he was beginning to claim that the judicial branch of the United States, under the Constitution that he helped write, predicated on the Declaration of Independence that he basically drafted, and a brilliant document, that the courts were acting independent of the nation, that the courts were extending immunity to that class of offenders which endeavors to overturn the Constitution, and are themselves protected in it by the Constitution, unquote. Now, here's the rest of the story. Jefferson, who I greatly admire, who played an incredible and brilliant role in the Revolution, in the independence of this country, in the drafting of the Declaration of Independence, in the formulation of the Bill of Rights, in the Constitution, and an avowed guy for individual rights and against big central government. Nonetheless, this history story I just brought you about treason, his behavior indicates a president, now think about modern times, folks, who was willing to allow his politics and his personal vendettas to cloud his judgment. He hated both the defendant and the judge, and he personally inserted himself into a criminal prosecution. Does this sound familiar? You bet. So let's think about the story I just told you. Let's think about now, in the context, by the way, of the fact that the 2020 election was, obviously, and I'm going to be bringing you evidence, shall we say, over the course of this show, stolen by a concerted group of co-conspirators on many different levels across a wide swath and region of land, entailing not one vote, not two votes, but millions, perhaps tens of millions of votes. But think back to those years in the first decade of the 1800s, and think about now. A controversial presidential election, a stolen Supreme Court seat, according to some, allegations of treason, a president with open disdain for the courts and the press. The contest that defined treason then, folks, seemed to have elements which are very familiar in that time period between 2017 and now. All right, today, as I've promised for the last 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about election fraud, both election fraud in the past, particularly 2020. You know, that free and fair election, absolutely the cleanest election ever held in the history of mankind, and what you can expect this year. And I'm going to give you some tips on what you can do to try and fight it, to try and avoid it, to try and recognize it, to try and hold it accountable, because it's going to be coming at us full bore. In fact, it's already begun. You know, in addition to all the fun things the Dems pulled in 2020, right under our disbelieving noses, and in the Arizona election, poor Carrie Lake down there, and Katie Hobbs, you know, crooked Democrat run by the cartels, I've brought you that story. They have a whole nother host of tricks up their sleeves for this upcoming election. As we've discussed in previous shows, they have nothing to lose, folks. That's a formidable adversary. First, let's briefly review what we learned from 2020 and 2022. I'm sure you remember all these things, right? How about Zuckerberg, Facebook, Dataman, putting $400 million of his own money into local elections, actually funding election boards, putting out all sorts of drop boxes, and funding who knows what else. Absolutely illegal, no accountability, no prosecution. Fortunately, some states have passed laws now where no private individual can fund elections. That's good. Unfortunately, lots of states have not. TrueTheVote.org, one of the greatest outfits out there. These people rock. Make sure you send them some money. They do almost more than anybody other than Judicial Watch and several other voter groups to ensure the integrity of our elections, and they are tenacious in hunting down fraud and pursuing it. TrueTheVote.org. They took that film, do you remember 10,000 Mules or whatever it was called? Dinesh D'Souza was involved, and they had infrared tracking, mules that were obviously being paid by the Democratic Party, going to countless drop boxes numerous times, tens of thousands of votes, and then dropping them off at polling places. And they weren't just dropping them off at polling places, folks. They were depositing votes in these remote drop boxes. One can only wonder, should we say, the veracity of those ballots that they deposited time and time and time again. There's an actual film of that, right? I mean, it's impossible to refute. And then a refusal to verify signatures in blue states, blue counties, Democratic strongholds. Somehow this always seems to center 99% of the time in blue areas, blue counties, swing states. Must be just a coincidence. So when you get an absentee ballot, you have to match the signature on the voter rolls with the signature on the envelope of the ballot. You know, they just didn't bother to do that. And by the way, they had all sorts of ballots they were counting where the signature didn't match whatsoever. Then, of course, we had dead people voting. I had brought you several reports on that. Hundreds of thousands of dead people around the United States, particularly in swing states, magically arose from the grave, trundled on down to the election center and the polling place and cast their ballot. Then we had suitcases coming in, you know, after around 3 a.m. in Fulton County, Georgia, ironically where they have one of the four nonsense Trump accusation trials going. And those suitcases weren't filled with overnight clothes. They were filled with ballots. And this is long after the polls close, I might add. And then interference with poll watchers, not allowing conservative or Republican poll watchers within 100 feet of the counting tables. You know, contrary to the law, but who cares about the law? And the same with election monitors. There were certain precincts and counting stations in blue or swing areas, unfortunately staffed by blue folks, who actually put paper over the windows so you couldn't even look in. Absolutely contrary to law, no prosecutions, no accountability. And machine tabulations, right? All sorts of weird things with machine tabulations. And several machines that have been taken apart and forensically examined, which, by the way, many states or counties, blue areas, have refused investigators access to. Somehow we found pre-programming. you know, if you cast two votes for Trump, one is automatically converted to one for Biden. I personally saw, and I think many of you did, you'd be watching a vote tally on the TV screen, and literally, suddenly, 500 votes, I'm taking a number, would jump out of the Trump column and jump onto the Biden column. I mean, the exact amount at the same instant. Something really wrong, because all those vote tallies you're seeing on the boob tube, they're all fed by the machines. And then, of course, myriad of machines were found out and filmed to be connected to the internet. Absolutely illegal. And machine reset problems. You know, think about Arizona there in 2022. Oh, everything was tested and certified. The day before the election, Maricopa County election watchers, yes, right, they go down and they reset the machines. So the machines were doing the vote for this guy, but the vote is cast for that guy deal. And then, of course, the machines broke down. Just somehow they didn't have the right printer paper for them. You know, they only had 2 years to prepare for it, and they had to close polling places, which just so happened to be in heavy Republican districts, which, of course, threw the election into chaos. And eventually, Katie Hobb, who has been proven to have, shall we say, deep financial ties to the cartels, is elected by 17,000 votes over Kerry Lake. Yeah, rather doubtful. And then, of course, there was the destruction of evidence. Take just Colorado, for example, where the Colorado Secretary of State destroyed the records and destroyed the memory bins, I'm not a technical wizard, of machines just several months after the election, when state law mandates that she keep those records for 2 years. And then they prosecuted a county clerk who kept copies of the records. Wow. What exactly is there to hide? Why do we have a law? And why isn't it enforced? I think we know the answer there in blue Colorado. And then, of course, we had late counting, right? I mean, we all know of the instances, particularly in 2020, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona. Trump is ahead by hundreds of thousands of votes, and all of a sudden, oh, everybody's just tired at the counting stations, and they have to go home and get a sandwich and have a little rest. And when they come back in the morning, oh, we found all these ballots, you know, in suitcases rolled in at 3 a.m. in the morning. And that lead, it's no longer a huge lead, is now just a slight behind. You know, it's amazing how it shifts over. And then we have the trucker's testimony, particularly one trucker who testified under oath that he drove 300,000 blank ballots across state lines and involved dropping off ballots at four different states in the Northeast, most notably Pennsylvania, a swing state that just coincidentally Trump was ahead by hundreds of thousands of votes as we all shut our eyes. And then in the morning, oh, we found all these ballots. We forgot to count them. And too bad, so sad, out of millions and millions of votes, you're now down 80,000 votes. And those were the quote-unquote little examples of what happened in 2020. And it's by no means exhaustive, by no means. It's just to remind you of what was done and what has not been corrected and what has not been prosecuted. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal, and obviously I've done a pile of research on this little series of personal financial preparedness I'm bringing you. And in doing so, I looked at a bunch of precious metal dealers. There's a bunch of them out there. Some are very good, but I think one of the very best, BBB, A-plus rated, 5-star rated, is Harvard Gold Group. They have a terrific private direct delivery program, your house, your business, your investment accounts. They can help you set up your investment accounts to hold these metals. I negotiated, by the way, a $250 discount on your first order through them, which I think is kind of cool. And they have a lowest price guarantee, whether it's gold or silver, and they will be happy to talk to you about that and how it works. So call them, 844-977-GOLD, or go to their website, harvardgoldgroup.com, and use the code REID, Reed, that's me, to get your $250 discount and some other goodies. Hey listeners, this is Reed Lance Rosenthal, your host of On the Right Side Radio, and I have a message for you. Do you want a business? Sell a product? Provide a service? Have a message you want to get out? Do you believe in freedom, the Constitution, and America? Here's your opportunity to reach 69 million sets of ears in scores of markets around the country, including 5 of the top 10 and 15 of the top 50 markets in the United States of America. Very affordable, very flexible, 30 and 60 second packages available. Give your business a boost and help America get the truth. Call Francis at Media Airtime at 602-300-8250, 602-300-8250, or write Francis at MediaAirtime.com. That's FRANCIS at MediaAirtime.com. Thank you. Then we had the big treasonous, concerted, conspiratorial illegalities, carefully thought out and planned in advance. We had the COVID conjure. You can't vote in person because, you know, it's just not healthy. So you can mail in paper ballots, and so can everybody else. And we had the Russia hoax. Oh, you know, it's not really Trump voters voting for Trump. It's really Russia manipulating the election, and Trump's in collusion with them, right? Thrown out and still kind of raised to this day. And then some mysterious stuff which was never really tracked down. Gee, think about those checks going to Joe Biden. Think about treason and how it's defined in the Constitution. Checks going to Joe Biden, and somehow, you know, China was involved with satellite uploads from certain machines from certain areas, according to testimony under oath at various hearings. But nothing ever happened. Nope. Wasn't tracked down by our illustrious commander-in-chief, who can't remember his own name. And then we have the Biden laptop deal. Right? The laptop from hell. Oh, it doesn't exist. It's disinformation. 51 former Intel chiefs. By the way, if you track them back, virtually all were appointed by or associated with Obama, with very few exceptions. And they swore up and down that laptop, that whole story was disinformation. And of course, the FBI was out in advance, since they knew it was going to get out, telling the social media companies to beware of a hoax involving the laptop from Hunter Biden. I mean, that takes planning. That takes coordination. This is a big picture screw over of our republic. A thumb in the eye of the Constitution. And in my mind, treason. And of course, going along with it all is the corrupt state media, who reads the bulletins fed to them by the DNC and by the White House every day, who still, by the way, insists that there was no voter fraud, there was no election fraud. It was the freest, fairest elections in the whole planet, the 2020 election and the 2022 midterms. And anybody who says opposite is a threat to democracy. A threat to democracy. And finally, and once again, this is a partial list, we have the absolute refusal of the FBI to investigate verified occasions of widespread election fraud. For instance, the 2000 Mule film that we were talking about. I mean, this is film. This is infrared. This is high-tech stuff. This is like what spies do, right? All on camera. Nope, no investigation. And of course, the corrupt and complicit media says, you know, it was all manufactured. Never happened. Mm-mm-mm. Even when some of the mules were caught and confessed, never happened. Nope. And the same games were played in the senatorial runoffs in Georgia. And the same games were played in some key races in the 2022 midterms. The silver lining is that they showed their hand. I mean, they've showed their hand as what they're willing to do at the expense of the American people, both economic and physical safety and philosophical freedom, by installing a known senile as the head cheese of the country, along with an imbecile, I mean, that's the only way you can describe her, vice president. I mean, only a deep disregard for this country would allow a political party to proceed. Only a lust for power, overflowing with an insatiable greed for money, at the expense of anyone and anything, their country and their fellow countrymen, could lead somebody to install those two. And then to run the government from the Georgetown $8 million mansion he purchased to stay in Washington, D.C. By the way, the very first president to ever do that in the history of our country. Every other president has, quote-unquote, gone home. But, you know, you have to be a couple miles from the White House to be in touch with the staff that you've installed the White House to run the puppets that you fraudulently elected. Which brings us to the upcoming election. What can we anticipate here? Well, they've already laid the groundwork, folks. Think about, let's start at the big picture for the 2024 election. Let's talk briefly about some of the expansions of previous antics and new antics they're employing and have been employing and plan to employ. Once again, lots of people acting in concert in a treasonous manner as election engineering and election tampering and fraud in the 2024 election. And next week, I'm not going to have time this week if I'm going to get some rat-a-tat-tat in. Next week, we'll go over some of the things you can do, because there are things you can do, but you got to do them, folks. Let's go over the big things. Number one, the indictments of Trump. You know, lawfare. I'll talk more about that here in just a minute or two. The attack by Garland on anything and everything having to do with voter registration and voter ID laws. It doesn't matter what state, but particularly his attack on the red states. J6, you know, the whole conjure over J6, those dirty MAGA Republicans, those conservatives, threats to democracy, insurrection. And then, of course, labeling all MAGA folks, as they call them, domestic terrorists, right? Which gives them special latitudes in terms of law enforcement and surveillance. And that extends, obviously, into anything you happen to do or work on in the election process. And then we have Soros. Oh, Soros, working in concert with Biden, actually Obama's third term, FCC. He has bought hundreds of radio stations, three different networks, one of them a conservative Spanish-speaking network. And guess what? All those conservative stations, 300-plus, and this is for billions of dollars, folks, 300-plus are now going to be converted to liberal stations. You lose the conservative viewpoint and vote get out, you gain the liberal vote get out. And then, of course, we have the 10 million illegal aliens that we know of that have come in over the last several years under Obama's third term. And they won't tell us what location they've gone to, despite the fact, by the way, we've paid as taxpayers for $500 to $800 cell phones, which allow them to be tracked. As I told you in previous weeks, that's about 22 more congressional seats. It changes the numbers of electoral votes that certain states may have. But since we don't know where all these people went, I can't tell you which states. And of course, in concert with Garland's attack on picture IDs, along with blue state attorney generals and blue state DAs, many of them installed by Soros, you don't think any of those illegal aliens are going to vote, do you? I mean, even though New York and Illinois and San Francisco are allowing them to vote in local elections. And of course, this lawfare against Trump in these four conjure deals extends to his supporters, extends to his affiliates. Look at what they're doing in that New York, that corrupt judge and Letitia, baby, they're in New York. I mean, they are completely outside the bounds of the law they're trying to invoke. They give each other a wink and a nod. The judge pulls values out of his butt. I'm a real estate guy. I mean, you know, I can tell you, just looking at pictures of Trump's properties, that the judge is wrong on the valuation. And then, in a crime which harmed no one, cost no one a dime, that the bank said they would do again because it got repaid every dime in full, including interest, and made money, they want to fine Trump $350 million and take his flagship properties. And, oh, by the way, you can't do business in New York for 3 years. I mean, really? You don't think this is blatant election fraud? That's exactly what it is. And then, of course, the attempts to remove him from the ticket. Have you ever seen that before? Colorado, Illinois, and Maine, slapped down by the Supreme Court. But it takes time. It takes money to fight these things, which diverts from the election campaign. It's election fraud. And the Dems, they started this really in 2022. They've done it, oh, in little cases here and there in the past. But now it's like full bore. They're giving money to the Republican candidates in primaries, Republican primaries, that they want to win because they figure their guy, the lefty, has a better chance of winning against a certain candidate. In other words, in my mind, election interference in an election, which is exactly, by the way, what a primary is. It's an election. And, of course, they've been playing the games for the last, well, since 2016, 2012. They've been playing the game of inserting third-party candidates who lie and say they're a conservative to draw votes from the conservative. You know, I hope they get their just dues with RFK this go-around, even if they didn't want to provide him security, you know, which in and of itself is kind of election fraud, don't you think? A well-known billionaire, political family going way back, son of an attorney general, a U.S. attorney general, nephew to an assassinated president, but he can't get Secret Service protection. Okay, got it. And then they've criminalized any fraud investigations or claims of fraud, including backed by videos, backed by evidence. You know, True the Vote just got done winning a big lawsuit that was brought against them, saying they were somehow slanderous, liable, blah, 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 you know, because they accused a certain outfit in a certain jurisdiction of voter fraud, and they proved it. They won. Did you hear anything about that in the press? Of course not. And then finally, today, we'll continue this next week. How about tens of billions of our taxpayer money without our consent to left-wing supporters, like unions to shore up their pension funds? Did you know that there's a union that's giving $200 million to the Democratic Party and to Biden for his reelection? They happen to be the union that got their pension bailed out by Biden using our tax dollars. And, of course, into education, particularly college campuses, where our tax money is getting out, number one, indoctrinating those college kids, and number two, getting them to vote left, 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 and indoctrinating them on socialism and socialist candidates. Actually, communist candidates, but I don't think the kids even know what communism is, to be honest with you. All this, in my mind, folks, or a great portion of it, is treason for all the reasons that we discussed. Now, next week, we'll talk a little bit more about the shenanigans that they're playing or expanding on for the 24 election. And most importantly, what you can do about it, because there are things you can do. And now, how about some rat-a-tat-tat, although it's going to be brief. Unfortunately, you know, the Supreme Court stopped Texas after the Fifth Circuit said they could from arresting and deporting illegal aliens in Texas. And Alito, our Supreme Court justice, he put a stay on Texas's ability to arrest and deport illegal aliens originally until March 5th. He has now extended the stay till March 18th, and apparently the Supreme Court is going to hear it in full, give or take, right around that time period. This is a really big case, folks. As a heads up, some great new videos on the preparedness page, link upper right on therightsideradio.com, and some great new videos on the COVID page. I don't have time to talk about them, but they are certainly worth watching if you value your financial security and your health, and you don't value government control. And then, I don't know if most of you are aware of this, because really, the national media didn't pick up on it much, but, you know, Santos, who was kind of the slime bag guy that was elected as a Republican House of Representative in New York, was booted out of the House. Kudos to the Republicans, because the Democrats would have kept him in. I mean, just look at Fetterman and Biden. But there was a special election to replace him, and a Democrat won the election. Now, the Republican candidate was not the strongest. The Democratic candidate had previously been a member of the House of Representatives. There were a number of things going on, but one of the things that was going on was that he was very well funded, and he was funded by a lot of outside money, including, as just an example, the LCV Victory Fund, which is a super PAC. It's part of the League of Conservation Voters, the LCV. They spent over $700,000, that's a lot of money in a congressional race, to support this Democratic nominee, Tom Suozzi, and oppose the Republican nominee. And do you know what they are all about, folks? Oh, yes. The Green New Deal, the environment, and climate change. Let me quote. "We count ourselves as part of a robust, inclusive, and anti-racist climate movement," unquote. And last but not least, do you remember that the church down there, the big evangelical church, got shot up down in Texas? Two people were wounded, the perp was killed, and for the longest time, you know, until after the dust had settled and everybody had forgotten about it, you didn't hear anything about who the perp was. Well, it comes to find out that this was a guy who was a transgender and identified as a woman. Oh, and did I mention that he, she, whatever, was originally from El Salvador? That's right, an immigrant from south of the border. By the way, the police still refuse to say whether her body was identified biologically as female. You know, privacy and all those types of things. Apparently, the perp was born as a man, Jeffrey Escalante, in El Salvador, and identified as female, she, her. Oh, well, terrific. I'm glad we can count on our woke police forces and our woke press and our woke government to always give us the facts, true, correct, and complete on a timely basis. We're out of time. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Remember, look in the mirror, repeat after me, and repeat it with conviction. I will muster. I will stand. I will not comply. I will never give in. I will never stop fighting. I will join with those in these United States and around the globe who love freedom as I do, and we will win. Oh, yes, we will. Keep the wind at your back. I'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, go to OnTheRightSideRadio.com. Click on Show Archives, and you'll find all of Reed's shows and a terrific array of informative articles, videos, and reference pages. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of On the Right Side Radio with Reed Lance Rosenthal.